Arjuna uvacha karlingas tringuna etam karlingas tringuna etam atito bhavati prabho kim achar achara katam kaitams Chaitam Trigunan Ativartate Chant.
Arjuna Vacham
Arjuna Vacham
Karlingas Trigunan Netam
Karlingas Trigunan Netam
Atito Bhavati Prabho
Atito Bhavati Prabho
Arjuna vacha
Arjuna vacha
Karlinga shringuna netam
Karlinga shringuna netam
Atito bhavati prabho
Atito bhavati prabho
Vimachara kakam chaitam
Vimachara
Trilingas Tringaretan Atito Bhavati Prabho Kimacharyakatam Chaitam Tringunanativartate. Ladies. Arjuna uvacha,
Arjuna
said, kai, by which, lingai, symptoms, trin, three, gunan, qualities, etan, all these, atitaha, having transcended, bhavati, is, bravo, O my Lord, kim, what, achara, behavior, katam, how, cha, also, etan, these, trin, three, trin, gunan, qualities, atit vartate, transcends. Translation, Arjuna inquired, O my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to the three modes of nature? What is behavior? What is his behavior? And how does he transcend the modes of nature? Please repeat, Arjuna inquired, O my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to the three modes? What is his behavior? And how does he transcend the modes of nature? Srila Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, Arjuna questions are very appropriate. He wants to know the symptoms of a person who has already transcended the material modes. He first inquires of the symptoms of such a transcendental person. How can one understand that he has already transcended the influence of the modes of material nature? The second question asks how he lives and what is his activities. Are they regulated or non-regulated? Then Arjuna inquires of the means by which he can attain the transcendental nature. This is very important. Unless one knows the direct means by which one can be situated always transcendentally, there is no possibility of showing the symptoms. So all these questions put by Arjuna are very important, and the Lord answers them. In the next verses. So I'm going to go back to another verse in an earlier chapter of the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna explains. And of course, the answer to these questions is given by Krishna in the next verse very clearly. So without understanding these answers, the questions are left unanswered, or what we might say. We don't go any farther than the questions. We need answers. And so in order to fulfill the need, we'll read Krishna's words. Personality of Godhead said, O Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear. Huh? Just the next ones. No, this is, I was going to do that, but now I decided to just take Krishna's direct answer. He answers it again in a different way in the fifth chapter. But this seems to be directly related to the question. The personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, or delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering, undisturbed through all these reactions of material qualities, remains neutral and transcendent, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon the lump of earth, a stone and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal towards the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activity. Such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. So Krishna gives the answer in these three verses, four verses actually. Om Gyanatimirandasya Gina Jina Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Bhupa Kadam Mayam Dadati Swam Padatikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So, what are the symptoms of one who's fixed in higher consciousness or transcendental consciousness, spiritual consciousness? And one of the things is not the material modes of nature present to us what we say, various opposites, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor, gain and loss. We see that the whole world chases after gain and tries to avoid loss as much as possible. And therefore one is always moved by happiness and moved by distress. So this is how the world works. Everyone has their ideas of happiness and their goals for attaining that happiness. And therefore they strive accordingly. And success means happiness, and failure means unhappiness. The unexpected always seems to arise, and people have to deal with that also through various types of reactions of happiness and distress. So this is the world where everyone is moved by personal gain and personal loss, either externally or internally, by fulfillment of one's desires externally, by how things come or don't come. We have that same expectation on other people. And therefore we're moved by happiness and distress by what others do or say. So that's the world of duality. That's the world within the three modes of material nature. But transcendence means one is, the word is dhira, or sober. Not moved by happiness and distress, loss and gain, honor and dishonor, victory or defeat. Now this is one of the main symptoms. And Krishna says in the fifth chapter, he makes a similar statement in a more concise way. He says, a person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant, nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the sciences of God, is already situated in transcendence, 520 in the Bhagavad Gita. So again, the principle of not being moved by happiness and distress, like that. Not being moved means not being disturbed. So in order to do that, one has to be situated on some higher principle of reality. And what is that principle? The principle is fixed in one's devotional service. Devotional service is not within the three modes of material nature. It is transcendent. But the practitioner may be affected by the three modes due to their consciousness. Although the activity is by itself is pure, the person performing the activity is not pure. And therefore one is affected by results like that, or very much attached to the results. We have the example in the Ramayana. Since tomorrow is Sri Ram Navami, we'll be speaking a little bit, a lot, about Lord Ram and his pastimes. And there's much to be learned on an individual level, on our own personal growth from these pastimes. Because more than any of the leelas of the Lord, these deal with morality, principle, righteousness, devotion, honor, like that. Higher moral principles in regard to one's service to the Supreme Lord. So we see Sri Ramchandra, who is the personality of Godhead, the son of King Dasarath, when he was asked to become the prince regent, the next king of Ayodhya, due to Dasarath, his father, being old and feeling the need to retire, no longer able to run the kingdom, but at the same time finding someone who is qualified, his own son. He was enlivened by that, and therefore he offered, not offered, but pretty much said, "You are the next king." Ram was delighted to accept the instructions of his father. Not so much because he wanted to be the king, but because it was his duty, both as the prince of a respectable and powerful king who had ruled the kingdom for hundreds and hundreds of years in a very, what we say, perfect way. The citizens were all happy. The kingdom flourished. All his enemies were defeated. He was, what we say, a life of exemplary leadership and devotion at the same time. But, of course, old age came and came like a, what we say, a rushing dog onto his coattails. And he had to move in a direction, which mean he could no longer become king. So one of the king's first duty is to find a heir to the throne. And so he found it in his own son. And he was delighted. Not only did he find it in his own son, but the son was completely qualified and, what we say, chosen by all others to be the perfect king. He had all the qualities of a king and more. Loved by the citizens, concerned for the citizens, powerful, could give protection, could give facility, could give leadership, could give direction. His father, in other words, what he was giving was even more than what his father had given. He was everything and more of a perfect king. But, and so he accepted that position as a duty towards his father and to the citizens of Ayodhya and to the welfare of the whole world. He took it on as a responsibility, happily. But when things changed, when his stepmother, Kaikeyi, influenced his father by saying that you have given me some benedictions, and now my benedictions are that Bart becomes king and Brahm goes to the forest for 14 years. Dasarath was overwhelmed with lamentation. In fact, he was shocked. His mind was destroyed hearing the words of one of his favorite queen, who he thought was his, what we say, friend, his supporter, his well-wisher in everything. And that's the way it had been up until she was influenced by bad association. We'll speak about that tomorrow, how a good person can become a bad person simply by association. And how a bad person can become a good person simply by association. So in this way, what was something wonderful turned into something disastrous for the king. Now, having given his promise, and for a king to go back on his promise, the Kshatriyas are known for their honor, their duty, and their word. He gave his promise. He didn't expect what was going to happen. And what happened was the most horrible thing he could think of. Now his son was no longer going to be the king, and not only that, his son who he loved so much was now going to be no longer visible to his eyes for 14 years. Devastated in heart, his mind was reeling with anxiety. He was overwhelmed with disbelief, grief, anger. He couldn't assimilate any of it. And he tried to argue his way out of it. But being a righteous king, he was pressured by his queen, Kaikeyi, to follow his word, although his word was given reluctantly. And so, now the whole situation changes. Now, Ram is to be informed of all the changes. Ram is asked to come before his father and stepmother, along with Sumantra, the leading minister, to hear the change. Ram walks in, can't understand why the situation is not so joyous, why his father's in the lamentation. His stepmother is acting very proud and arrogant. He questions, and finally the answer is given. Your father has given this benediction to me, and I want Bart, my son, to be the king, and you to go to the forest for 14 years. Dasarath didn't have the problem with Bart being the king, but he did have a great problem with sending Ram away for 14 years. And so that was the essence of his grief. Now Ram, seeing that this was the instruction of his father, he said, "So be it, my dear father, this is your will." Of course, he understood that his will was forced, but still, it became the will because he had promised. And therefore, his promise was his word. And because of that, everything changed. But one thing, Ram didn't change. Everyone else was, what we say, devastated by the change. Of course, except Kaikeyi, she was happy in a very the happiness of a thief, you might say. One who does something wrong and receives some success from their wrongdoing according to their own standards. She was happy, but her happiness wasn't genuine. It was based on evil intentions, or wrong intentions, we might say. And Ram, he simply acquiesced to the decision. Oh, if this is what everyone has decided, then this is also my desire. So everyone else was shocked, devastated, moved, unhappy, except Ram. He thought, oh, now my father is asking me to go to the forest and not to accept the kingship. I will do it. I will do it. Not only do it, but I do it happily. So here's the point of transcendence. He was happy to follow the instructions of his father to accept the kingdom. He was happy to follow the instructions of his father not to accept the kingdom. He wasn't moved by the decision one way or the other. He was situated in higher principle. In other words, he acted according to the instructions of superiors, which is the basis for keeping higher principles in the forefront. What are the instructions? What I like? Well, that may be nice. What I don't like? Well, of course, that's there also, because when there is like, there's dislike. But that becomes not important anymore. What becomes important is the instruction. The instructions of higher authorities, in this case his father, who was in one sense his guide in life, both materially, and of course his father had given the reins to Vasishtha as being the spiritual guide of the community, and Ram was taking instructions from Vasishtha. So Ram accepted it. Oh, okay. So he was transcendental to the situation of happiness and distress. And he simply acted like that. Why? Because he was happy simply to accept the will as it came down. This is important to understand in a very basic principle here. One who is not disturbed by the reactions of the material energy. You can expect things to change in this world. This world is the only constant. Is change. The only constant is change. One thing you can expect is that there will always be change. And of course, the final change is we have to leave this body and move on. So change is constant. But if a devotee is affected by the changes of the material nature, then their consciousness is more like a leaf in the wind. Whatever happens, one moves that. You'll see a leaf is blown by the speed and by the direction of the wind. It has no stability of its own. When the wind stops, the leaf stops blowing. When the wind again blows, the leaf moves accordingly. So the material energy will push the living entity one way or the other. Now, to actually act on the platform of what we say freedom from attachment and aversion, or fixed in consciousness, one has to be somewhat purified from material desires. Because as long as material desires are there, they're going to influence one towards one way or the other. But even if one has material desires, if one is situated in the principle of obedience to higher authority, one becomes successful in reaching transcendental consciousness. Because these instructions are to bring one to the principle of devotion and surrender in devotion. So therefore, one should see the highest regard is what is the instruction and how to carry out the instruction. And find happiness in the instruction and find success within that instruction. In other words, one who not just theoretically but deeply makes the instructions of the spiritual master or the spiritual master's representative as designated by the spiritual master, as one's goal in life, one is on the path of transcendence. And that will bring one to the freedom of material desires. As long as we are moved by our own individual happiness and distress, we will still remain on the platform of material consciousness like that. And therefore, enthusiasm and activity will be what we say motivated or relegated or tempered. The word tempered means adjusted by our own feelings like that. I'm enthusiastic in this situation. I'm not enthusiastic in this situation. It's because of my situation. So a devotee knows what is the enthusiasm. It's the instructions of the spiritual master. Yasya devi tata deva, yata devi tata guru, tasyaita kartita yata prakasananta mahatmanaha. This is a verse from Svaita Svatara Upanishads, which explains that one who has implicit faith. The word implicit means that faith that's not moved by situations. In both the instructions of the spiritual master and God, both, not just one, then one can understand all the truths of spiritual philosophy, the conclusions of what of the scriptures. In other words, one is fixed in pure knowledge when one has implicit faith. Faith is fostered by knowledge, and it's also strengthened by situations. Certain situations can also affect the quality or the level of our faith. When things go our way or accordingly, our faith becomes stronger. When things are not, our faith is challenged in the situation. So, but a devotee will understand that, you know, this is the way of the world. Happiness will come, distress will come. Honor will come, dishonor will come. Success will come, defeat will come. Honor will, this is the world of duality. Even within the realm of Krishna conscious practice, where there is success and failure based on our preconceived idea of what is success and what is failure. There's an old story. It's a little hard to understand from our perspective, but it has a very strong method. There was once a sweeper in a temple in India, and his main duty was to sweep the temple and keep it clean. And he would spend the whole day doing that, as people would come in and take darshan and offer prayers to the deity. So this would go on. People would come and he would see every day people coming before the deity and offering prayers to the deity. And of course those prayers were also requests by the Lord from something material. So he was watching this year after year. He became curious. How is the Lord responding to these people? What is it like? And then one night in the dream, the Lord appeared to him and said, "Oh, you're wondering what it's like to be me? All right, you can be me for one day. You will be the Lord. But one thing you should understand is you don't speak. When people come, you simply listen to the prayers. That's all. You don't say anything." So he thought, okay. So he's there. Now he's the deity. And the first man comes and he's very, very poor. And he says, "My dear Lord, I've been struggling so hard. I have nothing to eat day to day. Me and my wife are struggling just for food. Please give us some food. Give us some facility so we can live. This is very difficult." So the man goes away. Now actually, before that, he's the second man. The first man comes. He's a rich man. And he comes and he opens up his wallet, puts a big donation in the hundi, and saying, my dear Lord, please, I have this plan to make more money and this and that, and I'm going to, please fulfill all my plans. So he opens his wallet, puts it in, leaves, offers his obeisances. Then the poor man comes. But the rich man, as he leaves, he forgets his wallet. It's laying there in front of the deity with a lot of money in it. He can't say anything. So the poor man comes, offers his prayers, and he looks down and he sees this wallet. Oh, my dear Lord, thank you very much. He was just praying for money and facility, and there it was, within a minute. Oh, you're so kind, my dear Lord. You have simply fulfilled my desires. Thank you. And he's grateful. He's humble. He's not what we say considering his own good fortune. He considers it simply the mercy of the Lord. That's all. And so he picks up the wallet and goes. And then a third man comes, and he's a sailor. And he says, my dear Lord, I have to go on a very difficult, dangerous sailing trip tomorrow. Please protect me. Now, while he's praying, the rich man comes back looking for his wallet. And he looks around, he doesn't see his wallet. And then he sees the sailor standing there, and he says, hey, did you see my wallet? Actually, I think you took my wallet. Where's my wallet? Because you're the only person who came after me. And the sailor says, I don't know what you're saying. No, you stole my wallet. So now an argument is being, so the sailor's defending himself, and rich man's accusing him. And finally, this man, who's now the deity, he can't keep quiet anymore. You know, and then, well, first what happens was the rich man starts calling the police. This man, he stole my wallet. Arrest him. Put him in jail. And now the deity, this man who's now the deity, is thinking, this poor sailor is going to go to jail, and he didn't do anything wrong. And this rich man is accusing him. So he speaks. And he says, he didn't take your wallet. Wow, God's talking. Everybody gets excited. They all start paying their obeisances, including the police. They get up. And then, so that's all he says. He didn't take your wallet. So the man apologizes to the sailor. The sailor thanks and they both leave like that. So that night he goes to sleep. And then the deity appears to him in a dream. He said, I told you not to say anything. And you talked, you ruined the whole thing. He said, this rich man is always, he comes all the time. He's so greedy. He gives a little donation. He's always praying for more money. So I caused him to lose his wallet. And this poor man, actually, he's my devotee. He struggles. He worships me very nicely. So I wanted to give him some benediction. So I gave him a chance to find the money. And this sailor, he was about to go on this dangerous trip tomorrow. So I arranged for him to get arrested to go to jail so he wouldn't die on sea. And you ruined that. I get the message? We think we understand how the Lord should respond to our desires. So we become situated in personal interest in the way we perform. But therefore, what Ramchandra is teaching, and of course it's being taught throughout the Shastras, is one should be fixed in what we say, what is devotional service, and not what is personal gain or what is apparently personal loss. That's arranged by the Lord. Rake Krishna More Ke More Krishna Rake Ke. If Krishna wants to kill you, you can have all the armies in the world around you. And it won't work. If Krishna wants to save you, you can be alone in front of a firing squad and nobody will shoot. Yeah, that happened. There was, during the war in 1973 between Bangladesh or West Pakistan and East Pakistan, which is now Bangladesh, Prabhupada had sent Brahmananda and Tushita Krishna to preach in that area. So then the war broke out, and so all non-Hindus were in danger. So they had to leave the country. So buses were leaving the country. But the Islamic army there were stopping the buses, and anybody on the buses who was not a Muslim, they were killing him. Just taking him out and shooting him in front of a firing squad. So Brahmananda and Tushita Krishna are on the bus, and the bus is going to the border. The army stops the bus. They're dressed like this. They say, get off the bus. They put them in front of the firing squad, and they're about to shoot them. Prabhupada was praying for them because he knew they were in a dangerous situation. He didn't know what happened to them. So Brahmananda said to Tushita Krishna, hey, we're going back to Godhead. So he takes out his beads and he holds it out. He says, come on, let's chant together. So both of them hold out their beads like this and start chanting, and the firing squad's looking like, what's going on? These guys are not even slightly a bit afraid. And so they stopped the whole thing. They were shocked to see such, what we say, fearlessness in the face of death. And so they let them go. They reacted and like, okay, well, this is what Krishna wants. We can't do anything but simply accept that we're going back to Godhead now. And so, yeah, so they had faith in the holy name. They had faith in the holy name. And of course, Prabhupada was really praying for them. So, yeah, a devotee might undergo different, what we say, reverses in life. Reverses in life is part of life. And so how to deal with reverses, the qualities of a person is mentioned here. They're undisturbed through all reactions. Or they may be a little bit disturbed, but they don't really change their course of action. They stay fixed in their devotional state. They stay fixed in the principles. They say, when you have a fruit, you know, and you squeeze it, what comes out is the juice, right? If you have a lemon, there's lemon juice. If you have an orange, you have orange juice. If you have other fruit, the juice is called. So, in other words, what the apple or orange or fruit is on the outside, the juice matches on the inside. So a devotee may find himself in a situation, but when they're squeezed, what kind of juice comes out? What is the juice? In other words, how do you respond to situations accordingly? Do you lose your Krishna consciousness and simply act according to material desires? Do you react in the wrong way, or do you react in a non-Krishna conscious way? Or do you act differently? Do you act externally one way and internally when something changes in a different way? So this is also one of the qualities of dear, and to not to be moved by happiness and distress like that. Why? Because one is situated in transcendent. Transcendent means fixed in devotional service. Nothing can move a person who's fixed in devotional service. Jai. Sisi panchatattva ki jai. Okay, so I was asked to speak for 10 minutes. I think I fulfilled my obligation as a dutiful servant, trying. Any questions? What is transcendence?
Yes.
The last example you gave with the squeezing the lemon, how to check what's inside.
Well, when you squeeze, you'll know, you'll find out. When someone squeezes you, you'll know. It'll come out. If there's not devotion there, whatever else is there will come out. In other words, when you're put under pressure or put under difficulty, do you act differently than under normal conditions? Do you live by religious principles, or you live by the principles? Prabhupada says you can chant, you can teach a parrot to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, but when the cat comes, he chants cat, cat, cat. So his level of chanting is simply just parroting. So that might, we must also say, what is the level, how deep are we into our own practice? Does that have we gone deep enough to feel, to act in all situations accordingly? And that comes with our chanting, really. Going deep into the chanting. In other words, chanting with attention, with devotion, with enthusiasm. Chanting as if it were our life and soul, everything. And living according to religious principles. Following those things as our means for execution, devotional service. I'm kind when people are kind to me. I'm nice when people are nice to me. But when they're not, I'm just Harani Kashipu. Or Ravana. That might be more appropriate to the theme of the Ravana. So yeah, so you'll see when things don't go your way, what happens? How do you react? Sometimes it's not wrong to react in the wrong way or in a normal way, you might say. But at the same time, that if we continue with that consciousness after the initial reaction and don't reflect on the situation and don't think how to understand this in light of the knowledge and Shastra, then what may be an opportunity for advancement, although it's difficult, becomes the cause of our going down in spiritual practice. We lose the opportunity for advancement. Yeah. Is that okay? Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. We think about one thing but act different. So is it better to be honest or to act like appropriate?
We should think and act according to the what is the best way to act, because it's for our own best interest. How we feel maybe is always, can be influenced by our desires. Therefore, for example, if you were trying to become humble, but if we don't feel humble and we're not acting according to the principles of humility because we're acting according to how we feel, then we'll never develop humility. It won't come, because you have to practice it in all situations. So it's not artificial to act according to knowledge as opposed to feeling. How am I supposed to behave in this situation? What are the qualities? What are the characteristics? So then these things are natural because they're part of the soul. They're part of our progress in devotional service. So if we don't, and we push these aside and respond according to how we feel or don't feel, we lose the opportunity for that quality to develop. And at the same time, we also don't gain the knowledge we could have gained in that situation. So feelings come and go, but knowledge is a force that keeps one in the right direction. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, knowledge is like light and ignorance is like darkness. To know the principles of knowledge is one thing, to act is the perfection of that knowledge. So that's why we learn Shastra, we come to classes to learn what is the right thing. And then too, we walk away thinking how to apply it. We read, we also think in the same way, how to apply it. So feelings come and go. So So that the word is Shastra Chakshus, seeing through knowledge, not seeing through the eyes. One who sees with their eyes sees the external. One who sees with knowledge sees both the external and the reason behind the external. Does that make sense? You see more than just what the eyes see. Yes. I thought I saw another question. No? Okay. All right? Is that all right?
Yes.
You sure?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, we have to live, we have to function on a spiritual platform, therefore we have to function in knowledge. What is the proper understanding? What is the proper behavior? Anything else? Otherwise, we're moved by whatever the situation is. Is that it? Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's full faith in knowing. One of the symptoms of a devotee in the process of surrender, knowing that Krishna is my only protector. Not one of my protectors, but my only protector. So he works through his energies to give protection to his devotees. So to know that and to understand that means to know that whatever's happening, if Krishna wants, you know, nothing I can do can save me. And if Krishna doesn't want, it doesn't matter if I make any arrangements, Krishna will save me. In other words, full faith that Krishna's in control. He is. we sometimes see it through the small experiences. We try to do something, although we don't do it perfectly, still it comes out. That's Krishna. Because we tried. We try. Sometimes we try very hard for something to come about, but Krishna doesn't want it to come about, so it doesn't come, even though we tried hard. So Rakhe Krishna Mordeke, in that sense, is that some Prabhupada uses an example, just like a fire sometimes you see will consume a bunch of houses. And so it'll hit one house and then it'll jump to the house, not next to it, but to the next one. The one in the middle doesn't get burned, but the one on each side does. So why is that? It's just, we might say, providence, the way, the will of the Lord. So Krishna is the ultimate in protection, providing, like that. That takes a lot of faith. When we're put into that situation where the devotees were in front of the firing squad, is Krishna going to save me or not? Well, that's not the question. At the point, is Krishna going to save me or not? The question is, am I going to take shelter of Krishna in this situation? We don't have to worry about what Krishna is going to do. Is he going to save me? Am I going to take the full shelter? I know he's the only protector and provider. I have that faith. Therefore, I can act on his behalf or don't act when it's not his behalf. Rakhe Krishna Morike, Mori Krishna Rakhe. It's not a small statement. But Prabhupada says Krishna doesn't protect the body necessarily. He protects that person's spiritual practice. Anayan chintayantumam yejanar ayupasate. Tesha nitya bayuktanam yogashema vaham yaham. I carry what they lack. I preserve what they have. One who's engaged in devotional service is always protected by me. They can never go down into the material energy. Anything else? Is that all right? It's not so easy. We can speak nice philosophy, but when time comes, when we get put into that situation, how do we respond? That's the test. Are we like the parrot who chants Krishna, Krishna, and then cat, cat? Very well. Okay, is that all? Anything else? Okay, so see you tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai Gaur Premanande Hari 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 Bo. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada.